This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hey, my name is Aaron, 29, and I live in a wee village just south of Glasgow. I've been sober curious for a couple of years now, regularly listening to the podcast while stuck in the drinking hamster wheel. I would class myself as a middle-aged drinker, starting from a young age to drinking 2 pints of Guinness and a bottle of wine every night as standard, ramping it up at the weekends. I had my last drink on the 31st of December 22, kicking off the new year with Dry January. 2 weeks in, I took the plunge and decided to join the community. It was the best decision I made. I'm now 100 days sober and looking forward to smashing the big 365. I have made friends for life in the community who are always there if I need support and to help celebrate milestones. Previous failed attempts at sobriety were always on my own. Connection is key. If you're listening to this podcast and you're sober curious or attempting this on your own, I encourage you to make that leap and join us. You won't regret it.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. As always, it's just ace to have you listening wherever you might be on your alcohol-free journey. You might be sober, sober curious, teetotal, alcohol-free, however you want to describe it. You might still be drinking while listening to this. Stick with us because we can guarantee you a shedload of alcohol-free inspiration. If you're thinking, who's this loud northern woman? My name's Sharon Hartley. I live in Lancashire in the northwest of England. And my little app today has told me I am 4 years, 10 months exactly alcohol-free. We're flipping who? It's not always easy. We know that. We say that a lot, but it is always worth it. And people say, how bad did it get, Sharon? Why can't you have just one? What was your rock bottom? None of that jazz. I decided to take a break from booze. I drank too much, too quickly and far too often. And that break from booze turned out to be completely and utterly life-changing. And we sing about sobriety week in, week out on this fabulous podcast Over the Influence. See, I'm as excited as you now, Ben. You've made me all giddy.
Sorry. I'm Ben. I'm 34. I live in Liverpool. You don't care because you've seen that we're celebrating a milestone today. Because these are my favourite episodes. I am over 3 years alcohol-free myself. This lady is not far behind me. Hot on my tail. Frederica. Freddie, welcome to Over the Influence and happy 2 years alcohol-free today.
Yay!
Thank you very much. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else than with you two. So, yeah, thanks for having me here.
You are more than welcome. And for the purpose of our dear listener, I would just like to draw attention to the fact that lovely Freddie is wearing there one of her many Over the Influence t-shirts, I'm sure. I think that one, was that from the Three Peaks we did a couple of years ago? Oh, no,
it was, yeah.
Yeah, Y3P team, it is. Look at that. Orange mountains, logoed up to the eyeballs, loving life. Freddie, 2 years alcohol-free. Congratulations. How are you feeling today?
Today, I am, yeah, absolutely riding the pink cloud. As I said to you, as we were kind of coming on, there was a few tech issues. It's one of those days where quite a lot has gone wrong. The train to work was really delayed and I was meant to get in early and I didn't. And then while I was at work, a couple of things that I'm juggling at the moment, they went a bit wrong. And on the way home, I got absolutely drenched, which is kind of the reason that I'm in this get up and not in my kind of work outfit. I got the heavens opened and I got absolutely soaked. So I quickly ran in and dried off my hair a little bit. But do you know what? Nothing's going to stop me feeling good today because, yeah, I can't believe that 2 years is here. And I had a really, really lovely morning with Greg, my other half, who you guys know. He bought me a really lovely present to say well done, which was lovely. I got some fantastic messages from, you know, my friends in the community. Woke up to some really lovely messages of them. And although sometimes this journey can feel very lonely and quite kind of isolating, yeah, finding OTI was the icing on the cake, and I wouldn't be kind of 2 years down the line if it wasn't for that, and having that support network around me, and not just support network but friends around me, you know, is really wonderful. So I've had a lovely day just thinking back to where I was 2 years ago and where I am now, and feeling very, very grateful and also very, very proud of myself.
So you should. So you absolutely should. Before we get into chatting more about it, I can remember, in fact, if I'd have been a little bit more organised, because I think everybody's a little bit flapping today to get on the calls on time, and the tech didn't work entirely well. All my fault. Apologies. I wish I'd have brought up the email that you sent me just ahead, I think, of your 100 days, Freddie. And it's one of the, it just sticks in my mind. I thought, oh, she sounds lovely. She sounds really nice. And you were like, oh, is there any chance of having one of the OTI, you know, alcohol-free telegrams for 100 days sobriety? And that's what I vividly remember. And it has gone so fast since that point.
Yeah, I know. And actually, I have it here. Oh, it's look. In my office. Look. I still have
no
it.
Way.
Yeah.
No
I have
way.
It up on my little board that, you know, because yeah, that, you know, that first 100 days, that dragged. It was tough. You know, I remember thinking, "Gosh, this is hard. Is it always going to be this hard?" And then since then, I'm like, "Where's these last?" I'm not going to even try the maths. But where has the time between 100 days and yeah, and wherever we are now, where have they gone? And yeah, I think that, like you say, kind of aiming for that 100 days, feeling all of those emotions, really holding on to those times when it gets tough is absolutely worthwhile, and something that I think people should aim for sure.
That was 630 days ago, Freddie.
I knew we'd work it out.
630 days ago. For anyone who's new to Over the Influence, by the way, this is something that we do for anyone who wants it. If you hit your 100 days alcohol-free, it's got to be 100 consecutive days, hasn't it, Shaz? 100 days alcohol-free.
Can you not plug this?
Shaz will send you.
Because every time you plug it, stop.
Shaz will send you. And I'm letting you, it's absolutely Sharon. I have got nothing to do with this at all. Apart from clicking order on the actual postcards themselves, Shaz does the rest of it amazingly well. But you will get a telegram from the Queen of Sobriety, because in the UK, if you turn 100 years old, you get a telegram from the king now. But, you know, the classic is telegram from the queen, telegram from the king to celebrate being 100 years old. Well, you get a telegram from the Queen of Sobriety for...
Do you know how many listeners we've got in bloody America, in Australia?
Everywhere. But you know what, Freddie?
Everywhere.
How did it feel to receive that? Like, why did you want that postcard from Over the Influence on 100 days?
I think, as I said, you know, even 2 years on, and even now having a lot of, you know, friends in the community, and also a boyfriend who doesn't drink. So I'm definitely surrounded by more people. But at that time, I didn't know anybody that didn't drink. You know, all of my friends, big drinkers, all of my family, big drinkers. And even now that, you know, today, for instance, is kind of my 2 year soberversary, and like my mum, who I'm really, really close to, and I know she loves me and I know she's very proud of me, but she doesn't get it. And like, you know, it's not even on her radar, and you know, when I mention it, she says, "Oh, that's nice." Like, you just don't get it unless you're in it and you're going through that. And so to kind of have somebody, especially, you know, Shaz, who I'd listened to on the podcast, and over the Influence of podcast, and then the community, had been a huge driving force to help me get where I was, to have somebody kind of go, "Oh, I'm really proud of you, and I think what you're doing is fantastic," was, you know, was something that really kind of spurred me on, and it got me to that 100 days, and then it's got me through that. And I do, you know, I still look at it sometimes and go, "Oh yeah, that's lovely." And it's one of those things that's in my toolbox, as they say, as something that kind of keeps me on that journey. And it is really wonderful to be able to share the journey with other people, because without that, it can feel quite isolating, I think.
Less than 10 minutes in and Sharon Hartley's already crying.
Get lost. Yeah, I am. It will never not. It's why we exist, right? It's why this podcast exists, and it's why the community exists. And to hear you say that it is something as, you know, we pick it up as a flipping telegram. It's a handwritten postcard, and I get out my best Sharpies and I take it to the post box myself. And I know I do. And sometimes I've got a little bit of extra time. I sometimes put stickers on and stuff and like really fancy it up if I've got time. And it's hearing how Over the Influence And something as small as a postcard and that acknowledgement can make such a difference to people. And that is at the heart of what we do. And that's what gets me, because if that message just gets across to another person and another person who wants to change their relationship with alcohol, because we, all of us on this call now, we've almost got like this crystal ball, haven't we? You're 2 years down the line, Ben's three, I'm heading for five. You know what's coming. You know it's not going to be easy. Like you've said, those first 100 days, of course, are difficult. You do feel like you're a bloody sober Lone Ranger and nobody else gets it. But the way life begins to change, it's breathtaking. And I just want people to know that you can absolutely do it. It's within your power. It's all there in you. It really, really is. And if we can give you a little nudge, a little, I don't know, a virtual hug, a little bit of encouragement to do that, it just makes it all worthwhile. So thank you, Freddie, and thank you for being part of our community. You're just ace. We love having you.
Thank you.
Ben, take over, please. I need to blow my nose.
Right. Freddie, let's go back. Me and you are around the same age, aren't we, Freddie? I think you might be a couple of years younger than me. But we grew up in a time when, you know, indie music was on the rise, wasn't it? Man United were actually good. What else was happening in our youth? Ah, yeah. Remember, like, the world was just kind of, like, boring and John Major was the Prime Minister?
Yeah.
You know, it simpler times when we were growing up. But having said that, Freddie, when we started to get into our teenage years, the kind of binge drinking culture that we were thrown into was a pretty, I don't know, it was quite all-consuming, wasn't it, in terms of, you know, the laws had been passed so that pubs didn't close. We could go out until whatever time we wanted to in the morning, and it would usually be followed by a house party. Let's go back 2 years and one day. What kind of drinker were you?
So I was your stereotypical kind of binge drinker. My whole life was focused around drinking. And I mean that in the sense that, you know, going right back to the days that you're talking about, my first sense of socialising was down the park with my friends at kind of 13 years old, sharing a bottle of vodka. Well, you know, because I saw all the adults around us at kind of celebrations and commiserations and everything drinking, and it was kind of the thing to do, and it was how you socialized. And then when I started a new school, when I went to sixth form, it was house parties every weekend, and they were always very heavily fueled with drink, and it was completely acceptable. My mum used to buy me alcohol to take to these parties, and you know, even though she knew that I was drinking, kind of maybe she didn't really notice at 13, 14, but at 16, 17 she definitely knew. She knew I was going into bars and clubs underage with like my other friends' IDs or older brothers and sisters' IDs. And then I went to uni, and, you know, first year, I think my attendance at lectures was about 23%. And that was what it was about. It was, you know, going out all night and sleeping all day kind of thing. But it was completely normal, you know, Monday to Friday going out uni, and then at the weekends going out with my friends at home. And so when I say that my life revolved around drinking, that really was the focal point. I love live music and festivals, and, you know, was going to gigs during the week. But it was always very much like, OK, so we'll meet at this pub at 6:30 p.m. and we'll have pre-drinks and we'll drink those. And then we'll buy drinks to take into the cab that would then take us to wherever the gig is. And then we'll get there and we'll drink those. And then where are we going afterwards? And it was always kind of, you know, now that I look back at it, it was really focused on the drink. The drink was a major part of going out, and it was celebrated. You know, those conversations with my friends was always very much like, who got the most drunk, who, you know, who drank the most, who did the craziest thing, etc. And that was completely normal to us. And so throughout my 20s, that was very much how I lived my life. I then started in a corporate job and then also had that drinking as well. So it was work drinks. And that, you know, the saying at my first job out of, like, my first proper job out of university was, it was very much work hard, play hard, play harder. And my boss used to say to me, as long as you're at your desk at 9 o'clock the next morning, I don't care what you do the night before. I don't care what time you're out. I don't care what you're doing. Like, just be at your desk at nine. And that, you know, that was, even if I was there, you know, feeling a bit tender, that, oh, it's okay because Freddie's made it into work and well done. And again, kind of encouraged, and that was how you socialised and how you got to know people. And I think growing up, I was always a kind of larger than life character. I had a lot of friends from a lot of different kind of social groups, and I found it very easy to talk to people, especially when I had a drink. And so the two just went in hand and never really kind of questioned it or thought that there was anything bizarre about that, really. And I think it was as I progressed, I say into my kind of mid-20s, because looking back on diary entries that I've written over the years, I've kept a diary kind of sporadically. And, you know, it's definitely pointed towards drinking. You know, the night after, feeling very, very low, not liking what I do when I drink, not liking who I am when I drink, but also not really seeing that there was anything different about that. And I tried a couple of times to stop. And I say stop, I would, you know, have periods of abstinence, which I think everyone does, you know, throughout the journey. So it would be a month off here. And I remember the first time I had a month off, and I was probably 25. I thought, my gosh, I've never gone longer than 1 week since I was probably 13 without drinking. So a whole month at that time was huge. But I remember I didn't tell any of my friends. So I, I remember lying and saying that I was unwell one weekend to not go out. I remember going out one weekend and pretending to drink. And so just kind of like staying out of rounds and just like, you know, oh yeah, I'll have that, but then drinking other things, because I was just, oh, I can't say anything to my friends, you know. I was so kind of ashamed and trying to keep it hidden. And so that kind of lasted for 4 weeks, and then back into the drinking. And it just got progressively worse, to the point where I always say, when people ask me why I stopped drinking, that the negatives massively outweighed those positives. So the fun that I thought that I was experiencing, the good times and the laughs were becoming less and less, and the anxiety, the suicidal thoughts, the doing things that was completely out of character, the blackouts, was becoming much more prevalent. And that was where I, you know, realised that something had to change.
It's amazing listening to all of that. And I almost don't know where to start. Like, I've written shitloads of notes. And actually, you talking then has kind of unlocked something in me that I'd never really thought about before. So when we were at uni, how old are you, Freddie, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 32. I'll be 33 next week.
Okay, yeah. So you're a couple of years younger than me, but you were going to university at the time when Facebook was starting to kind of become a thing, like social media was starting to become a thing. Like,
yeah.
You said that you felt a bit ashamed and embarrassed, and you didn't want to tell your friends about it. You know what? I remember that time and feeling exactly the same way. And it was almost like because Facebook was literally just coming out, and it was when I joined it, you had to have a university email address.
Yeah.
It was almost like a competition of, right, let's show everyone from school who's having the best time at uni. And what does having the best time at uni mean? It means going out every single night of the week and getting absolutely smashed. And every photo of me had a drink in my hand. And you know what? I think if at that point, if one of my friends had said to me, you know, oh, I'm going to take a bit of time off, I would have gone, are you having a laugh? You know, this is what we're supposed to be doing. And there is that feeling, isn't there? I mean, would you say that were you always a kind of confident, because it sounds like you were always in the middle of lots of people. Were you always kind of confident as the person being in the middle?
Yes, I think I was. And I've thought about this a lot since I've stopped. And I've thought, did I start and did I go so heavy as that kind of cloak around myself to kind of give me the confidence? And I don't think I did. I do think that I was quite a, you know, even as a child, I was quite good at making friends. That was something that did come quite easily to me. And I think I was good at that. I think what I've learned, if I kind of skip it forward, is that actually I'm not so much of an extrovert. I'm an introvert that felt like I had to constantly play the role of an extrovert. I felt like I had to have lots of different kind of groups of friends, and that I needed to kind of be in the middle of it. And that was what fueled a lot of, you know, yes, okay, I'll come here. Yes, okay, I'll come here. You know, that bit of kind of people pleaser. But I don't think I struggled with the confidence as such. I think that did come quite naturally.
If I look back and I think, what piece of advice would I give myself as a kind of young 20-something? And I think it would be really simple. It'd be, you don't have to go out tonight. if you don't want to. It'd be that. You don't have to go out tonight, mate. You can stay in. But I think it was like our generation, we were constant. It wasn't like, you know, my parents and our parents' generation, where you go out on a Friday night and you have a few too many and you'd wake up feeling a bit crap on Saturday, but, you know, then you've got something else going on. And it wasn't like that. It was, right, Mondays are discounted drinks here. Tuesdays are everyone does this. Wednesdays is, and, you know, we talk about kind of when you leave uni, you get into that kind of weekend drinking. God, when you're in your early 20s, it's so easy to drink every single night of the week.
Absolutely. And my friends would literally, you know, we would say to each other that, you know, just drink. That's the only way you get through it. Everyone knows that. And that wasn't like anyone being mean to anyone or, you know, peer pressuring. But it was like, if I said, oh, I don't feel great, so, I'm not sure about coming out tonight. They said, just have a drink. Like, you know, everyone knows that. That's what makes you feel better. And you're like, oh, and it does, you know, for that night until you kind of build it up. But that was the way that we lived. It was just very much like, just have a drink, get through it, push through it. And at the time, enjoy it. You know, looking back now, I have a very, very different opinions on that. But that was kind of how it was set up when I was going through it, at least.
We are just going to take a very quick break from this fabulous chat with fabulous Freddie. I just could talk to her all day. She's one of our absolute favourites. She's brilliant. And in fact, I think, was it the first event she came on with Over the Influence? Yorkshire Three Peaks. And I think we are going to start talking about that a little bit later on in this episode.
Sharon's a bit all over the place. We are a bit all over the place. As you know, we record these little middle bits. The guest isn't here right now. You know, we record these little middle bits afterwards. But it's about 2 weeks afterwards. And I haven't edited this podcast episode
so
today.
Confusing.
It's the first time that my brother Tom is now the editor because I've started a new job and I'm frazzled and up the wall. Look, there's a few things going on behind the scenes. We've either talked to Freddie about how great the mountains are.
I think it's coming
up. Or we're
up.
About to talk to Freddie about how great the mountains are. So,
I think it's coming up. I think it's towards, if memory serves me right. And bear in mind, I'm perimenopausal and brain fog is real. It's just...
this podcast is free and it will always be free.
Good job. Good job. So...
We want to talk about the mountains.
We
because
do.
Because you're off to Ben Nevis, not me. I wish I was, but I'm getting married. Boo. No, I'm joking. I just wish that we'd sorted out the dates differently.
Yeah, it's a bit of a clash, isn't it? It really, really is.
Yeah.
And between us, myself and Ben, it's really important that we, where possible, we get on these events with you because we want to meet you, we want to chat to you, and we basically love the mountains also. So we've done some big stuff with Over the Influence. We've already boxed off Snowdon. We nailed Scarfell, and at the back end of August, bank holiday weekend, we are going to take on the UK's highest mountain, actual Ben Nevis. So it's a 3-day event. It's a 2-night stay. Hostel, food, mountain guides. This isn't me with my little iPhone, you know, on Google Maps going, right, this way, everybody, to the top. It's not like that at all. We do it absolutely.
It's very professional.
Well, it's very professional. We've got transport booked from the hostel to the foot of the mountain, minibuses and all the rest of it. It's going to be an absolutely epic weekend. We've still got a handful of places. If anybody is interested on a Ben Nevis weekend with Over the Influence, it goes without saying the entire event is absolutely, completely, 100% alcohol free. And if you want any info, just drop me an email, sharon@overtheinfluence.co.uk. And, you know, spare a thought for Ben. He'll just sort of be... probably lounging around in a bloody waffle robe somewhere with his free slippers. I don't know.
No.
Yeah,
so
whatever.
It's the weekend before the wedding because you're obviously coming to the wedding,
I am.
Sharon, on the Thursday following. If you can walk.
Yeah, assuming.
Fingers crossed you are.
Assuming.
We're having a low-risk August, I think. Because imagine if I went to Ben Nevis and did my ankle or something
it doesn't
get married.
About.
It would not go down very well.
No.
Sorry, I mean, I wouldn't... Oh, God. next year, can we do it again? And can we do it when I can come? Because I really want to do it.
We'll
really,
do something
really,
else.
Really, 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 really want to do it. No, I want to do... I couldn't do Scarfell either.
Oh, I can't... Do we have to do them all again?
Look, you don't have to do them. I'll do them.
Right, you do them then. I will just say again, the clue is in the title here. Okay. It's not a canal walk. It's not a short trot around the block. It's the UK's highest mountain. Okay, I have done it.
So cool.
It's a beast. It's a beast.
Imagine being able to say, oh, so, you know, you gave up alcohol and what did you do? Oh, I just climbed the UK's highest mountain.
Yeah, it is a big one. So bear that in mind. You know, you do have to be of a certain level of walking fitness because it's a flipping slog. You know, it's very steep and it's very high and it takes a while to get to the top. And actually, having done it, I think I've done it 3 times now. Every time I've been to the top, I get there, my head is simply in a massive cloud. If there's not a view this time, I'm after my money back, Ben Anderson. I'm just letting you know that, okay?
Yeah, fine.
I'm not doing all this again for no views at the top of Ben Nevis.
Right.
But I absolutely can't wait.
We've been chatting for ages. Let's get back to this amazing episode with Freddie, where she has talked about her love for walking that she only discovered by joining one of these events. She didn't know. She pushed herself out of her comfort zone. She joined the Yorkshire Three Peaks. I don't know if you've heard that already. If you're about to hear it, I'm going to shut up. And let's get back to the episode with Freddie. Think that's a good idea?
Yeah, let's do it. Come on. Shush. Yep.
Right, Shaz, you pulled yourself back together now.
I'm absolutely fine, thank you. I am not an emotional wreck. I mean, I am quite emotional, actually, just listening to Freddie talking. It's just great. Honestly, Freddie, thank you so much. I'm really enjoying listening to what you've got to share. I'll just get this in now because it'll come out at some point during the episode. Yet again, so I feel like a very proud auntie. You're so young.
Yeah, I knew that was going.
It's a staple, isn't it? Bog standard. I've got to do it. When you're in your 30s doing this, when you're in your 20s, flipping amazing. Big up yourself. You've saved Thank yourself you. 10, 15, 20 years of pain. You really, really have. Because as we know, drinking, it's progressive, isn't it? It's an addictive substance. Fast forward, you know, you become like me at the age of 44 and you wouldn't have wanted that, let me tell you. So every credit for doing it, Freddie, in your 30s. Loved listening to you and Ben talk there about your youth days at university. But what really resonated with me there, I'm very much like you, I think, in terms of... personality and being in the thick of it, you know, never had problem making friends and always quite gregarious, quite loud in the centre of the party. And for me, people say, why do you drink so much? You don't need it. You've got the confidence. Weirdly, I sort of did. I felt like I needed to do it to boost that confidence. And I always used to say, I'm so... extrovert, she's so extrovert, she's so loud. Remove the alcohol, and like you've just said there, actually there are times when I can be really quite introverted, and I would have never ever not introverted, maybe, I don't know, maybe less extrovert than I thought I was. And I used to always say, Freddie, I need people around me, I need to be going out all, and I can't stand my own company. Absolute crock off. It's just rubbish. There's something just so nice, just so wonderful on a Friday night, isn't there? You know, staying in on your own. As Ben said, you don't need to go out to have the best time. So that really struck a chord, that the whole introvert, extrovert, and being defined by the alcohol. No question. I'm just making observations.
I feel like you're talking to the wrong person, because Freddie, one of the things I love about the last 2 years watching you do this is that, you know, that first tentative 100 days. Yeah. You know, kind of feeling a bit lonely, like, actually look around my life. There's not a lot of people doing this. You haven't stopped your life at all, have you? Because you were always kind of, you know, you said you loved gigs and you loved live music. Have you done 2 sober Glastonbury's now?
Yes, so the
amazing
last weekend.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, you were there ahead of Cara Delevingne. Did you see that Cara Delevingne did?
I did.
Yeah, you did it the year before. She must have seen you walking around and gone, you know what? She looks bloody happy.
She looks great. She is glowing.
But you're a big Arsenal fan. You're always at the football. You go to the big gigs, the Glastonbury's, but also, you know, throughout the week, you're always out doing something, haven't you? you haven't stopped your, you know, social life. You've not let the fact that you don't drink stop you from doing anything with anyone or, you know, going anywhere. Glastonbury is a perfect example where we all know that, you know, things happen at Glastonbury that you wouldn't necessarily want to tell your mum about. I've not been, but I've heard.
Yeah.
was that a conscious decision for you, or is that something that you just kind of started doing and went, oh, actually, yeah, I can do this?
You know, it was 100% a conscious decision. So when I stopped, 2 years, one day ago, when I made that decision to stop and I was kind of in real despair, at the time, I was like, I will just want to live my life. I just don't want booze in it. I want to go out with my friends. I want to do X, Y, and Z. I still want to do everything that I do now. I just don't want booze in it. And that's kind of how I started on the journey. And throughout that process, you realise that, you know, there's so much more. There is so, things change, but for the better, and there is so much more. But for me, it was about not shying away from this, but actually throwing myself into it. Before I joined OTI, there was another kind of online group that I joined up, I found online, and, you know, I was like, okay, great. And I did a Zoom with them, and it was, you know, a Wednesday, and I was going away that weekend with my friends for a week to Devon. And it was in the summer, it was in August, and, you know, my friends will drink, and I kind of got on this Zoom and I said, oh, I'm going on this week on holiday with my friends. I'm not going to drink, and I, you know, what do you advise? And all of them said, don't go. No, you shouldn't be going.
No.
Stay, you know, you should stay at home, and, you know, you have to protect your sobriety, which I completely appreciate, but that didn't resonate with me. And I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, I thought this group isn't really for me. And I went and I took my alcohol-free options because, when I first started, they were an absolute lifesaver and a lifeline to me. I took my alcohol-free options. I drove everyone everywhere. It was like 3 of my closest friends, and it was a really, really nice experience. But it just showed me, no, you have to just put yourself into this. And so the more that I've done it, you know, very early on, when I first stopped, I went to see the England Euro finals, and I was stone cold sober. Gosh, no one else was, I can tell you that for nothing. It was mayhem down Wembley Way on the finals day. But, you know, and I went to Reading Festival in the August, and I'd stopped in the early July. And they were all learning curves. And I've said this quite a few times to people that I've spoken to that are starting out. I always say, treat it as an experiment. You've done these things a million times drinking. You know exactly what happens. You've never done it sober. So how do you actually know? This is just your brain playing tricks on you and saying, oh, you're not going to enjoy it. It'll be boring. How do you know? Give it a go. Just treat it as an experiment. Say, I'm going to do this sober. And if you really hate it, there will be another festival. There will be another gig. There will be another football match. And then you can go back to drinking. No one's forcing you to stop. But I think once you get the data and you put the two side by side and you say, this is how what happened when I was drinking and this is what happened when I was sober, I think you'll soon realise that actually the sober version is so much better and so much freeing. And I also think as well, one of the biggest things that I have learned through this is that if you don't enjoy doing it sober, do you really enjoy doing it at all?
So true.
Because as I say, like, yes, I definitely wanted to keep my life as it was. But actually, there was quite a lot that I did in my life before that wasn't that enjoyable. You know, the days of just sitting down the pub the whole entire day and just not enjoyable. So no, I don't do that anymore. But going down for an hour and a half and watching the football, I do still enjoy that because I like watching the football and I like to see what's going on. But now I'm so okay and happy with myself to leave when the football's done and say, okay, I've done what I wanted to do and goodbye. And so, yes, it looks, you know, from the outside that I do, and I'm very, you know, very, very passionate about learning to live your life sober rather than just kind of hiding away from it. But there's definitely differences because that's what kind of what happens is as you change, but definitely in a positive way.
Can we talk about something else that you discovered a love of in sobriety? And now I can't remember where you shared this story, Freddie. I don't know if it was on a forum post, on a Zoom call, chatting with us, on a walk, maybe. I can't remember where it was. But it was when you came on I think possibly the first OTI event we did, which was the Yorkshire Three Peaks, and you said, I didn't even know I liked hiking. And it was you discovered the mountains. Yeah. That, for me, makes me go, yeah. Oh, I love it so, so much. As she sits here on this chat now wearing your Three Peaks T-shirt, just talk to us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the amazing thing is that, yes, I do the things that I've really loved before, but my goodness, my world has opened up. I was thinking about this earlier, and I was one of those people that on my CV used to write, under interest, socialising. Yeah. And literally, like, what does that actually mean?
Yeah.
Drinking.
That was my only hobby in my 20s. It was my, honestly, people say, what do you do in your spare time? And I go, go out.
Exactly.
Socialising.
And that, I was thinking about that. And, going back to what I was saying earlier about drinking defined me. Drinking was all that I had in my little sphere. It was all that I knew. It was all the activities that I did were linked to it. All the people that I knew drank very heavily, etc. And that was all that I kind of knew. So the change to turn around and say, I'm going to stop doing that was scary. But exactly as you just said, Shaz, when I turned up to the Yorkshire Three Peaks, and I don't know if you remember, but obviously Claire put into the forum that she, wanted to do this event. And I thought, oh, God, that sounds horrendous, but I would like to meet everyone.
And it was, for the
record. So I thought, okay. And then I thought, I better do a bit of walking because I go to the gym, I do a bit of weight training, but I don't really walk, apart from walking to the bus stop if I need to go to work. So I thought, I better do a bit of walking. And I remember I went on this walk and it's not very hilly in London, so it's quite hard to practice up and down, kind of getting ready for a mountain. And I just ended up going around in circles on this place, walked in circles, and I put a forum post on. I said, bloody hell, that was boring. Like, I'm not looking forward to this Yorkshire Three Peaks event because 8 hours of just walking, no, this is going to be, do you think it will be okay? And that was the kind of preconceptions that I had. Anyways, I turned up and it was, exhilarating. I'd never been to the area that the Yorkshire Three Peaks are in. So that was just mind-blowing in itself. Was not bored for a moment because I was surrounded by all these wonderful people that I had these great conversations with. And then the actual thrill of kind of walking up and down these mountains and your heart beating and then being there with the wind in your face and coming down and really feeling like I'd achieved something was just mind blowing. I was like, that was incredible. And yeah, it's just insane to think that 2 years and one day ago, I'd never gone on a hike or walked up a mountain, and now I've been to New Zealand and walked up mountains there. I've done I've done Scafell, we've done Snowdon, and then we'll do Ben Nevis in August. And I've got a tattoo on a mountain on me.
Have you actually? So God.
I got the tattoo on my 18 months. It wasn't actually planned. It was while I was in New Zealand. I got it done then. It turned out it was on the day that I was 18 months sober, which was great.
And it's a mountain and you'd never hiked before. Yeah. You don't know how much I love that. It's just the best. Meeting a bunch of weirdos off the internet with Over the Influence. And here we are. I'll see you in August, by the way. Top of Ben Nevis, Freddie.
Can't wait.
I'll race you to the top. I absolutely
won't.
Oh, flipping out. That's really warmed my cockles, Ben.
Freddie, you know what? I wonder how many people in our generation, because look, me and you are very different people. We're kind of around the same age, but we are really different. I mean, I'm from the Midlands. You're from London. My football team will sell a player for 100 million. Yours will buy one for 105 million. Declan Rice, what's Mikel Arteta drinking? 105 million quid. Declan Rice, anyway.
We'll rediscuss it once we've won the Champions League next year.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Freddie's a huge Arsenal fan. When she talks about going down the football, she's watching down the Arsenal. But actually, you go to the Emirates quite a lot as well, don't you, Freddie? You're there and massive Arsenal fan, which is great. I wonder how many people feel the same way that we do. I wonder how many people put socialising on their CV. I wonder how many people thought that, actually, the more that the badge of honour thing, the more that I can drink. I'm just, how sad is that? That if it is a kind of generational thing, because I really do feel, like you said earlier, it defined me, alcohol defined me, and it was celebrated to drink ridiculous amounts. It was completely normal. Who could drink the most? Who did the daftest thing? Like, isn't it sad? Because I don't want to speak for you here, but for me, when I think back to that time in my life, I did do that. I used alcohol as a, I'm good at this. Look at me. Look what I'm doing. I'm drinking. I'm doing daft stuff. Actually, all I was good at was opening my gob and drinking something. Like, that's nothing to be proud of, is it? Walking up the York's Three Peaks and, you know, coming down the other side, and that's something to be proud of. But just opening your gob and throwing something down isn't something to be, like, I just wonder how many people did that. Do you know what I mean? How many people in our generation who were brought up drinking in the park, going to the clubs underage? Because I think they are hotter on it now. I don't think they were particularly when we were going out. You know, that Facebook generation, look, he's having the best time. Yeah, you've gone to the other end of the country for your uni, but look how much I'm drinking. I wonder how many people did. Like, am I talking for you? Is that something that you can relate to?
Most definitely, absolutely. However, I think you also have to, so I think this is part of the more kind of complex problem of drinking and alcohol. And I think, you know, if we talk about it really openly, it's something that we see from when we're really, really young. It's not coincidence that we kind of grow up and we look to alcohol as a way to socialise. And, you know, whether it's a celebration or a commiseration, and it's very, very much normalised. Until you realise, you know, my friends say to me, oh, you can still have fun and not drink. I couldn't do that. Oh, well, you could. You absolutely could, but you have to have that confidence and that conviction and within yourself. And we are herd animals, you know, we do like to be part of a group. It's what kept us safe all those thousands of years ago, so that we weren't, you know, left alone and killed by a lion. And so we have to have people around us. And so to then poke your head out in a society that's obsessed with alcohol and say, hey, actually, guys, I don't think I want to do this anymore, and I actually don't think this is the best idea, is like putting a massive ball eye on your head and saying, don't be my friend, and I'm the outcast. And we don't want to do that. From when we were younger to where we are now, you know, fitting in and being in a group is much easier way to live than to kind of poke your head out and go, oh, I'm gonna go against the herd here and do something that is still, even though we've definitely moved on a lot more, but is still definitely seen as quite a strange thing to do. So yes, I think there are people that have those thoughts. And that's why, you know, 2 years down the line, I was always very quiet about my sobriety. You know, my friends knew, but I wasn't that loud and proud about it. You know, I don't talk about it on social media. I keep it to myself. But that's why at this point I thought, no, I think I'm ready to share my story, because I really love, so, you know, other people that are our age that kind of say, oh, that's the only way that you can socialise, or I'm going to a wedding, I have to drink, or it's a festival, so the sun's shining, or it's 3 p.m, or whatever other excuse that we kind of come up with, to go, oh, okay, there is another way to do this. And hopefully that will resonate with them. And, you know, Ben, I know that we'll completely agree on this. You don't have to have a rock bottom. I read this great post, and it's like, stop Googling, am I an alcoholic, which I did plenty of times, and start asking, is alcohol bringing anything beneficial to your life? And if it's not, then just go, you know, then actually make those kind of steps to remove it and look at other ways that you can start enjoying your life. And I think that's the, for me, that's the kind of bigger part. It's having that confidence and that courage to put your head above the crowd, because it can be scary. And I don't ever underestimate that it's just a challenging thing to do.
We haven't been eaten by lions yet, though, have we, Freddie?
We haven't. It's crazy how, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of years on, our brains haven't quite adapted to the how we live, you know? So, but, you know, it's a conversation for Darwin.
Although I suppose OTI is like the new herd. I've got an new image in my head of like a herd over here. They're like kind of the, yeah, you know, drinking herd. And then people are like making mad dashes over to our not drinking herd. You know, standing over there, kind of like, can I come? Yeah, come on, quick, come on.
Exactly. Dash. That is why connection is so, you know, that is why connection is so important, isn't it? That's why that's why even with, the, you know, the biggest will in the world, I think you need that community and those people that get it, because, there's a reason that they say community is the opposite of addiction.
It's so true. And just going back to you two talking about drinking at university, I was exactly the same. You said there, Ben, oh, that's all I was good at. you know, just pouring this liquid down my throat. But a lot of that is to do with, it's to do with confidence, isn't it? It's to do making new connections when you're at university and, oh, you know, I'll be a good friend and we can all do this together. And then you spoke, Freddie, then about having fun. You know, is it going to be fun when you stop drinking? And in many ways, it just got me thinking, like, it's relearning again who you were before you became a drinker. So before uni or before your teens, as kids, we all had a shedload of fun, whatever that might have looked like as children. You had fun with your friends. And then when you remove alcohol, you sort of have to relearn the stuff you did when you were younger, how to have fun sober. You weren't, nobody would, you know, we weren't drunk as children. And then about making those new connections again, the connections like we did at university and things like that, you're doing it again in your 20s, you're doing it again in your 30s, in my case, in my 40s. But it can all be done alcohol-free. And it's like, right, it's like starting again. It's like almost like a second chance, really. So if we did it before we were drinkers, we can certainly do it after. But it's having to unlearn everything we've ever known, isn't it, as adults? And I think that's where a lot of the overwhelming thoughts come in. It's like, God, I can't do this. I can't do this. Because life does change. Your friendship groups change. The way you socialise changes. I'd love to know what we'd all put on our CVs now instead of, I like socialising.
Oh, what so we much thought? Of the stuff about walking up bloody massive mountains. Not just so one, much. Three of them. Why did we do three of them? Nuts.
It was great.
It was great.
But yeah, no, great. Exactly. It is. You have to relearn. You have to relearn how to do these things. How to do these things, what you enjoyed as a child. You know, for instance, singing as well. I sang a lot when I was younger. I really enjoyed it. I did some shows, etc. And then I stopped when I was about 15, 16 because I was too busy and going out. And then now, because I've got time back and I've got the energy and the clarity and the patience and the, you know, the
confidence,
the will to move forward. Yeah, I've joined a band, you know,
Woo-hoo.
And that was something that, yeah, that I loved doing when I was younger. And now I'm doing that again, you know. So these are all things that I, at the time, you know, and years ago, I would have said, yeah, I want to get back into singing. Yeah, I want to go and do X, Y, Z. Yeah, I want to, but I didn't do it.
What's the band called, Freddie? Because you're the front man, aren't you?
Front woman.
Front woman. Sorry, yeah.
Come on. Come on, Ben. 2023.
Isn't it not a very, isn't that the right thing to
front
say
person.
Though? Is to not, you don't say actress anymore, do you? Is that you're,
no, you do. You say actor,
woman,
don't you?
A woman who's an actress is not an actress, is an actor. But sorry, so you are the front person of.
We're called the 11th Hour Band because we were thrown together at the 11th Hour to do this kind of charity gig, and then we actually quite like the name.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, we've done a couple of kind of charity gigs. Got one at the end of July. I must, you know, the first gig that I did, I didn't let any of my family or friends come. I was like, no, I'm just going to do this on my own just to kind of get over the fear. Because if I'm terrible, none of you will know. I'll tell you I was great and that would be it. and I remember before I went on stage, I was really nervous. And I thought to myself, do you know what? I could really do with like, a Jägerbomb or a shot of something or a large glass of wine. And it would have calmed my nerves. Of course it would. That's the physiology of alcohol. A load of stuff would have happened after that. But in that instance, I would have felt more calmer. And I text Greg, my other half, and just said to him, you know, oh, this is how I feel. You know, I could, having a drink would really calm my nerves right now. And then he was like, you'd be robbing yourself of the experience. So just try to enjoy all of it. And that's what I try and remember now. Like, for so long, I spent a lot of my life in a bit of a daze and a bit of a, you know, a drunken mess. And yeah, it was actually cutting off a lot of the emotions that I think as a human, that's what we're here. We're here to experience them all, the good, the bad, the ugly. And so now I just try and kind of sit with it a lot more.
Freddie, you're ace. Let's do that little heart thing that Ben's doing there with his hands. Just ace. Going back to the singing that you used to enjoy as a child, another amazing example. Freddie, we're just about out of time. We've got about 3 minutes left. Final questions. It's a two-parter. If you could sum up Over the Influence and what it's meant to you over the last 2 years, how would you do that? And how would you sum up the last 2 years in terms of your sobriety?
Yeah, they are great questions. So I will try and fit them in 3 minutes. So Over the Influence to me has been the pinnacle of how I've managed to not just remain sober, but really enjoy it. And that's about having a space that I can connect with like-minded people and talk to them about things that no one else would really understand, and have those, you know, people that genuinely care. I know that if there's things going on, I've got a whole phone of people that I can reach out to and have those conversations with. And some of them are deep and meaningful, and some of them are stupid and just...
A lot of relentless piss taking, actually.
Exactly. And it's all built, all of it's built on sobriety. You know, we have these fantastic belly laughs, and not once have we had to, you know, drink and do something ridiculous to be able to get there. And I hand on heart, and I say this to you guys all the time, and that's why I'm so thankful for this community and the podcast. I wouldn't be 2 years down the line without Over the Influence. I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't have found the hiking. I wouldn't have found the people that are like-minded. I would have, you know, the loneliness and that. I tried previous times before, and this was the real missing puzzle piece. So for anyone that's kind of thinking that they want to do it but struggling to kind of make it stick, then, you know, join OTI, because we are a lovely bunch. And another thing that I really love as well, I love being able to now kind of help people that were maybe back 2 years ago, and that helps me, and hopefully I think that helps some people on their journeys as well. And then, do you know what? This last 2 years, for years, I craved peace and contentment. My life felt very like a roller coaster. I was either extremely high or extremely low, you know, and it was chaotic, and I was doing things that were very kind of out of line with my values and who I thought I was, and that left me in quite a bad headspace, and I was in an unhappy and unhealthy relationship, and I kind of allowed that to happen because my head and that was very clouded through, you know, the drink and through kind of the way that I acted. And these last 2 years, I've found peace and clarity and contentment. And there, I wouldn't trade that for anything. And I would have given anything just to have that. And I always thought that I would have to give away the excitement and the joy just to be able to feel peaceful. I thought, okay, fine, at least I won't feel like, you know, really low and kind of, you know, in quite a bad headspace. But actually, I haven't. That joy comes back, and it comes back, you know, in bucket loads. And now I get to do all the things that I did before and more, and it doesn't take away from the life that I'm living. And I'm really, really quite grateful for that.
You've made me cry 3 times in 1 episode. You may leave
now. That's a record.
You may leave. It's an absolute record. Frederica, Freddie to her friends, and of course to us, because she's a fabulous friend and a wonderful community member. Freddie, thank you so much for your time and Over the Influence. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And there we go. Big up your bad self, our fabulous Freddie, friend and community member, 2 years alcohol free. And it's just an absolute joy to listen to all the positive changes that have come about simply because Freddie thought, you know what? I'm done. I'm over it. You know, she got over the influence is what she did, Ben.
She did. And she got her walking boots on, because we know that she's definitely spoken about that.
Now, she has. Well, yeah, we don't know exactly when.
No.
In that episode.
But how good is that? Like, I love that she just went, you know what, I'm going to give it a go. And now it's something that she's done it in New Zealand now.
Yeah.
Like, she's travelled the world to do this. Like, this is something that actually means an awful lot to her. You know, and isn't it amazing that she never did that before removing alcohol?
No.
And that's a massive part of her life. Very cool, Freddie. Very, very cool.
She got over the influence and she got up the mountains. And if you'd like to get up a mountain with Over the Influence, so tenuous this, isn't it? Get in touch. We spoke about this in our middle bit of this episode. It's about 4 or 5 weeks time-ish, depending on when you listen to this, back end of August, August Bank Holiday weekend, we are doing the UK's highest mountain, Ben Nevis, given its location in Fort William. God, it's a beautiful part of the world. Oh, it really is stunning. It's a couple of nights, the night before in a hostel, the night after in a hostel, 2 nights, 3 days, meals, guided walk. This isn't me with my Google Maps going, everybody this way, let's get to the top. There's a brew. I'll get my flask out. No. And for that reason, we bring in the professionals that are fully qualified mountain guides to lead us safely to the top of Ben Nevis. If you do want any information on that, get in touch. Got a couple more events actually this year. This is our final, say it's our final biggie. It's our final of the of like the national three peaks that we've all done, you know, that we've done individually. We're also doing Penny Fan in September, and then in October our final event of the year, which is the Edale Skyline. That's going to be a beast, actually. I think that's about 22-23 miles, something
it's
like
great,
that.
It's great though. It's a cracker.
Yeah,
it's a really good day, that.
Yeah,
like I feel like that's kind of like my home walk.
I like,
you know,
that.
All these, yeah, it's kind of, it's one of the very first ones that me and Danny Bangers did, actually.
Yeah.
Danny, our community member.
Nearly finished you off, didn't it, actually? In fact, he's done a couple of times.
I was fine.
Did it finish him off?
It was my brother, Charlie, that had a bit of a moan that day. He goes, I thought this was only going to be 10 miles. I swear we did 10 miles, not 10 miles ago. It was very, very good.
I'm not coming walking again if it's over 10 miles. That's all we heard.
I was.
Charlie doesn't listen to this podcast.
Oh, well, let's hope not. Let's hope not, Charlie. I was talking to a community member on our Zoom call this morning about which height was it? I can't remember which height we were talking about. It might have been Snowdon. And she said, when you're doing these mountains, she says, you don't realise half the time how far you've gone, and, you know, how far up the mountain you've got, because you're having all these conversations with all these new people about
very true
alcohol-free life and
everything else.
And everything else in between. So if you are interested in that, ping me an email. Absolutely no problem. I can send you some information. otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. And if you want any info about being a community member, again, just look us up online. You can find us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, at Alcohol Free Pod. But if you just search for Over the Influence, you'll find us there. And, you know, we can share a bit with you about the community and what we do. We've got the Zoom calls. We've got the chat feature. We've got the events. We've got online yoga. We've got mindfulness. We've got loads of stuff, and it's a really wonderful place for connection. OTIHQ@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Ben, it's been a pleasure.